Good morning, everyone, Council of Elders, and good morning to ladies and gentlemen and all of our visitors here today. Well, this certainly has been an unprecedented period in the history of the United Church of God from the standpoint of ministerial and member services. We've had a significant loss of ministry, members, and finances. But just like when there's a stock market correction, oftentimes after the correction, there's a new period of opportunity, there's a new period of optimism that also happens. So while we've gone through, since the last time we've had a full council meeting, a period where we've had just great damage that's taken place to the church, on the other hand, we've had the unearthing of new leadership, we've had attitudes of sacrifice, attitudes of service that have been unprecedented in the United Church of God as well. And I look upon this period as a period of optimism as we go forward. I've talked to Bev, my dear wife, who I confide in with so much of what I do. I said, I really want to do ministerial services when it's fun. I said, I just remember that towards the end of my work with the Worldwide Church of God, it was just a very, very difficult period when the years of 94, latter end of 93, 94, 95 were extremely difficult. The beginning of the United Church of God was extremely difficult as we started. And then coming back onto this job again, it's been extremely difficult. I said, this job is just awful. But I look upon where we're going from here as a period of growth, a period of development of the ministry, a period of optimism. And that is exactly how I feel. I feel very, very optimistic about where we're going. And I want to build on the spirit that Denny brought up this morning. The situation that has led us to where we are now had been building for some time. And it was quite inevitable that what took place was to take place. One individual came to talk to Denny and me about certain plans for the beginning of this year. And he said and referred to a volcano that was to be coming. And after he left, Eddie and I said, volcano, that's just a very interesting allusion. You know, volcanoes are, you know, hot and they blow up and everything. You know, what does he mean by volcano? Well, we know what happened. The volcano did take place. There's still a little bit of lava flow on it, but the volcano, the eruption, has taken place. I would have to say, though, that December was one of the hardest months that I had, because every day we came to work wondering what in the world is going to be happening today. One day was bad when we had 18 resignations. It was just, you know, one after another that came through. I was just running over to Aaron Dean's office and saying, where do we pick up the equipment? You know, what do we do? You know, I mean, just doing all this type of thing. At one point in December, I was the only employee of ministerial services. I know that Gary Antion and Roy are part of the team, but just exactly where I was working, you know, I was only employee, and it really looked pretty dark there for a while. But I know that things, and the way that Denny and I looked upon each day with optimism, is that we're handling this one day at a time. And one thing about things being bad, they can only be bad so long before you hit bottom. And one thing we're looking forward to, where is, you know, bottom on this whole thing? And after you hit bottom, then there's nothing but up. And that's where we are right now. Here's the statistics of where we are with the ministry. At our high point in the ministry in 2010, we were at 492 elders around the world. Many of these elders we did not know in Ghana, in Latin America. So 309 of 492 have been retained. So 62.8% of our ministry has been retained. Now, it was closer to 66%, 65, 66% at the time of the conference, but we've had a number of people leave in Ghana and the Philippines since that time, which has brought that percentage down. The percentage of salaried field ministers, this is worldwide, that has been retained is 61 of 131. We've had 131 paid ministers. 61 of that number have been retained for 46.5 6%. The percentage of salaried home office remaining of ministers has been 70%. 30% have left. And the percentage of retired ministers, we had 14 retired ministers that we were carrying, 57.1% have been retained, 8 out of 14. The percentage of non-salaried ministers, local church elders, has been 69.1% that have been retained, 226 of 327. We had 327 at our high point of local church elders, 226 of those have been retained. Now the U.S. statistics, because this is the biggest chunk. Total number that have been retained in the U.S. ministry is 64%, a little bit closer to the two-thirds mark, which is 244 ministers that we have in the United States out of 381. 381 was a high point of U.S. ministers. Worldwide, it was 492. The percentage of salaried field ministers, we had 100 ministers in the field. 46 have been retained, 46%. 54% have left. And the percentage of local church elders that have been retained is 176 out of 247 for 71.3%. We'll have this printed out for you. I know that you're writing these things down, but these are the numbers as of Thursday afternoon when Chris Rowland and I went through the final numbers to present to you today. Internationally, the total number of ministers that have been retained is 58.6%. Out of 111 ministers, 65 have been retained in the United Church of God. Percentage of salaried field ministers is 48.4%, 15 out of 31. In other words, the United States has three times as many field ministers paid than the rest of the world combined. And percentage of non-salaried elders remaining is 62.5%. That's the local church elders. That's 50 out of 80. As far as church attendance, we've done as thorough a job as we could do for January so far. In fact, we sent out a special note to please tell us what the January statistics are, just so we get a handle on how many people we have in our churches. We have more than 7,500 people who attended church in January. Now, the average for 2010 was 11,361. So this makes this number 66%. Two-thirds of our membership has been attending. Now, that is not a totally true figure. There's some people that have attended both churches. They've attended. Some have gone nowhere. But that's what we have of those who have attended a United Church of God service. And there's also one more factor, is that January tends to be a very low month because of weather, and this year even more so. We've had two services canceled in January in our congregations in Indiana. So it's not really fully accurate. Hopefully the number is higher. The conference that was held at the end of January and the beginning of February was, I feel, a stroke of genius. I'm not sure exactly who proposed it, so I know there was either Denny or others. I was not the one who proposed the conference, but it was a stroke of genius, I feel, to bring all of our men together. We had more people in attendance than we did for even a general GCE. There was a spirit of optimism. One elder commented to me, it was the best conference he's attended in 50 years. And there was a sense of camaraderie and a sense of friendship that we have not had before. Ministerial member services also oversees international areas. And I can't give you even a full report because we have different people doing different things in various ways that we have administered it. We've had certain areas that have been such as Latin America and the French-speaking areas that at one time were just under one person in their own special environment of groupings of nations. And both of those, of course, have gone, and we've had to reorganize those areas. We've also had what are known as the senior pastors, which are United States pastors who've also taken on the responsibility of administering a different part of the world, namely Ghana, Nigeria, Kenya, Eastern Europe. And these are people who we call have called senior pastors. We're thinking about changing the name to maybe more representative of being international pastors as well. Some of the notable areas where I have been involved with, especially in the month of January, where Melvin Rhodes and I traveled to Central and South Africa to reconstitute what happened there, because the initial reports were that everybody has left. In fact, the initial report was that all pastors had left, not only pastors, but also elders, deacons. There was nobody. And it was as though that part of Africa, south of Sahara Desert, basically fell off the map. And it was a very difficult time as we went down there, not knowing what we would find. You can talk to Melvin about his attendance to a meeting, which we have no recording of. For 45 minutes, he was barred at the door and told to leave, and then negotiated with him. It was just a very, very difficult time in dealing with people who are our friends. You know, one thing that Denny brought up about the people that we are dealing with have been close friends, close people that we have been involved with the start of the United Church of God, that this very, very ugly, toxic spirit has invaded. I went to Zambia and Malawi because those are areas that I have been involved with from the standpoint of attending Feast of Tabernacles, plus humanitarian aid that has gone to those countries. The vast majority of aid that we have done has been to those two countries, as Malawi is the third poorest country in the world. Zambia is the fourth poorest country in the world. Malawi has 150 members, and Zambia has 280 to 300 church members. In Zambia, we had just been there for the Feast of Tabernacles. There was no indication at the Feast of Tabernacles when Bev and I were there this past year that there was any difficulty at all. In fact, we considered this past feast our best feast in this part of the world and didn't see any problem. And there was no need for us to talk about any problems in the United States. But shortly after our being there, the same ugly spirit, like this green smoke, you know, went through those areas as well, intoxified members. And in Zambia, we were told that nobody is going to be with the United Church of God, that they were named by a different name, and that everything that we had invested and everything that we had owned and everything that we had in Zambia is lost. In fact, when I traveled to Zambia, I wasn't even sure whether I had already plane reservations and bought tickets. So what do I do when I come there? Who do I talk to? You know, there's nobody really to talk to. But through a deacon in Malawi, I received a telephone number from a member who wanted to talk. And I just sent him a text message saying, do you really want to talk? You know, I'm available. And he and another member said, yes, we would like to talk to you in Lusaka. This led to him talking to 11, a dozen or so other people. And we met in Lusaka. I also met with the Pringle family in the Copper Belt up north, and after telling them our side of the story and telling them the facts of the matter and telling them, explaining some of the hysteria that has surrounded the information that they had around them, these people said, well, this isn't worth leaving the church over. This isn't worth starting a new church over. And we've been able to reclaim all northern Zambia. And now, central Zambia, Lusaka, I keep getting reports of more people attending services, the majority of people coming. It's just some of the people in the outback that we have to reach that don't even know what the facts and what the story is. Also, a group of 60 people who had left United 2-3 years ago have now started coming back to United as a result of this. So the information is very constructive and positive. We're working on regaining the property that we own. In Zambia, we own a very choice piece of real estate just outside of Lusaka, 12-acre plot, which has a stream running through it. It's been used for Feast of Tabernacles now the last 3 years. It's also a place where Youth Corps was positioned for the last 2 years. It's a place where they've had all kinds of activities, and they have basically appropriated that for themselves. The church has put in $80,000 into this area for the development of it. LifeNets has put in $20,000 into it. And we're working on reclaiming it, and we think that we have a very good chance. In fact, the Pringles had had taken on the services of an attorney in northern Zambia, this fellow by the name of William Nyirinda. And I thought, boy, that name sure sounds familiar. And we went back to my address book, and there he was in my address book. 5 years ago, he was director of all of Rotary for Central Africa and approved our two ambulances that LifeNet's got a grant for. So, I mean, it was amazing that, you know, here we come across paths like this. And so we've been in contact with him. In fact, I've been in contact with him this morning, sending him some more documentation. But we hope to be able to regain that property. We hope to be able to, in Zambia, have youth camp next month in April. And also, I would like to be able to have a youth corps project. We have people like Lena Van Osdell here who went last year, who is very much desirous of kind of picking up and carrying on from where we had left. We also do want to reach out to the leadership of those people. We have known these people so well that it's just beyond comprehension how they can walk away and be the way they have. And we really want to reach out to them, and hopefully conditions will change. Malawi, the same story exists. Virtually the church is intact. In fact, what's happened is that all the ministers have left. Members are okay. The problem has been the ministry. And the minister there, Louis Elifazi Salawila, has left with just a few families, mostly his own family. And the church, though, will stay intact. We have a deacon and a leading member who are handling the two congregations, one in the south in Blantyre, one in the north. Each congregation is about 75 people. In South Africa, we will be hopefully proposing one person for ordination. That will be our first ordained person in South Africa. We have another individual who's going down there to work, and we have another individual who has volunteered to go to South Africa, you know, to work for an extended period of time, meaning like a month or so. South Africa publishes the Good News magazine that is distributed not only in South Africa, but in Malawi, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. And that is continuing and will continue on to be done. Like I said, when you have a crisis, you have opportunity as well. And we have seen heroism that has been very, very emotional to me by what some of the local church elders and members have done around the country. People like John Miller, who have basically stepped away from their job for a few months and said, I will take on caring for Akron Canton in his particular case. He's done a marvelous job of holding those churches together and moving forward with them with no cost to us. Elders like Keith Wilson, who has pastored Pittsburgh and Wheeling every Sabbath, traveling to both churches with a difficult health situation in his family, sticking with it just every week. Don Perwitz in Springfield, Missouri, who called me and said, I will be available for a live sermon every Sabbath in Springfield, Missouri. People like Scott Ashley and Charles Malier, who basically, we're not going to try to replace anybody there in Denver because we consider it an area that is not a high priority because we have people that have just stepped up to the plate to care for that. Now, we do want to, ultimately, but not right now. Dan Dowd, who manages Boston and the Northeast, and others as well. I'm going to be missing people here, but we have been unearthing new leadership among local church elders, among deacons, and now people are saying, well, here's some more younger people that would like to be able to serve and to do more things. There's a sense of, I can make a difference, and here's an opportunity for me. I'm not going to be overlooked. Here's things that I can do. We will be, as though we lost 54 people from the field, paid ministers, we are going to be hiring and have hired about 10, and there's a few more that we need to be talking to you about here. One person responded to me yesterday who we want to hire, says, I'll work for you for free for 6 months. And said, then let's see how it works out, you know, from my end and also from your end. We have this type of thing that has been very, very encouraging. We also are communicating with the field ministry from Ministerial Member Services through not only the new ministerial newsletter and journal that's been revamped and redone, but also through the weekly e-news that we are sending out. would say that one of the blessings that I've had, one of the really marvelous blessings that I've had, is the acquisition of Chris Rowland to work in ministerial services. He's been a member in our congregation for 14 years, a real servant. Actually, we ordained him this last Sabbath, just a couple days ago, as a local church elder. But he will be coming here in a few months to work full-time in ministerial services. And we lost three people, one full-time and two part-time people in ministerial services. And he basically just overnight has absorbed all their jobs. I mean, he has not only absorbed their jobs, but made them more efficient and has been able to, as we've gone through the files and through the processes and procedures, said, this is how we can combine this, and here's how we're going to do this. He's just been absolutely marvelous. We've also had to do work on our ministerial budget, which was $8.7 million last year. The biggest part of the budget for the United Church of God is the ministerial ministry, care of the congregations, and $5.8 million of that, of the $8.7 million, is salaries. And, of course, with losing 54 people, it was kind of easy to kind of, you know, just do that zero. But we'll have to hire a few people back. But we have been asked by Aaron and by Denny to see if we could bring that $8.7 million down to $6 million. So Chris Rowland and I, and really I give him the credit, I call him the $6 million man, because he was able to bring the budget, you know, is to the numbers that we looked at, from 8.7 down to $5.9 million. Now, we've added a few more, and it's about 6.1, but we'll be talking to you more about that as we readjust the budget. Once again, we've lost 40% of the budget, but again, it's a new opportunity. Who do we hire? How do we hire? Some of the hires that we've had, we have hired people that have been on Social Security, and we've been able to work out a salary structure that's effective for them and it's effective for us. Some we have hired at two-thirds salary. As few we have hired full-time. Perhaps these are models for, you know, future hirings and doing things different than we have done, you know, before. There's still some unknowns. The 40% drop that Denny mentioned, I consider to be the worst-case scenario. I hope that it won't be that bad, but I think that in our planning purposes, we should be calculating at the minus 40%. But as we looked at the budget, and as we just did a preliminary run-through from the management team, it's doable. It can be done. There have been certain cost-cutting measures that have been brought up that, you know, we just hadn't thought of. Gerald brought up about the fact that the congregational subsidies, for example, some areas have not needed them, not needed the full amount. Some may not need the fourth quarter amount at all. With the churches becoming smaller, we've been able to now say, well, maybe we don't need to meet at the hall that you're meeting in now and meet in a smaller hall. So in our weekly e-news, we are going to have a cost-cutting column where we want ideas from you and ideas from all ministers about how we can cut costs. It's not over. Like they say, the fat lady hasn't, you know, sung yet, you know, as to how this is all going to work itself out. But I am very, very optimistic from ministerial services. I have never been as optimistic as I have, and I've been here almost a year. It's hard to believe. I've been here 10 and a half months working at the home office, but I'm very, very optimistic about where we are going. There's some things for us to consider. I feel like it's important to consider that the initial wave of people have left, but there are still some people leaving, and leaving for other reasons. Not necessarily because they're enamored with the new group, but because they've had hurts, and they've had misunderstandings, they've had conflicts with either the minister or other members. And this is a nice and convenient time to exit. It's a time to say, hey, others are leaving, I'm going to leave too. And maybe I'll be in this other group, at least it's just like a new set of circumstances. So we have to be very, very cautious and take a look at our congregations about fixing relationships, rebuilding and rebonding our people. As I took a look at the congregational list for January of our churches, as we look upon the losses, I take a look at it as to our assets. We still have two-thirds of the membership. In fact, we have a dedicated membership. We have people that want to make big contributions, not only with their lives and their time, but even financially. There are people who really believe in the mission of the United Church of God and in the attraction and inertia that we have had. We have people in the pipeline that have been reading, studying. We've had people now who have wanted to come to services. In South Africa, we've had three families that are attending church in Johannesburg that are brand new, absolutely brand new. And where one lady, she said, we told her, well, services are in a home. Oh, that's great. That's where my old church used to meet, too, you know. So that was no big problem for her. And she's really excited. She's been back with her four or five kids to services there. We have three new families attending Youngstown in Ohio. John Miller was told, don't bother even starting anything in Youngstown because they're all going with the other group. And John said, nope, I don't want to give up. Now we had 21 people for services last Sabbath. And I believe that trend is going to be all throughout the United States. In Eastern Europe, in the Nordic countries, I get request after request for visits. And one woman who wants to be baptized in Copenhagen, another woman in Stockholm. There are all kinds of opportunities for people that really know who we are, who have been getting the Good News magazine, who know the brand, and really want to, you know, continue. I want to thank everyone who has been so helpful and supportive, and I want to, of course, work with the direction that we are going. But I'm very optimistic, and I'm very, very grateful for what God has done. We have a job to continue comforting our people, you know, protecting our flocks, assuring them that it's going to be okay. As one person told me, I don't want to know all the facts. Just tell me it's going to be okay. I told her, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You know, it's going to be fine. We've been here before. I was same place where we had a massive drop in income in 1998. We had to, you know, lay people off. We had to put ministers on half salary. And the budget that we're working on right now, and this is for the cameras here, we plan not to hire, I mean, we plan not to cut anybody or to reduce salaries the way we have it now. There'll be cuts, believe me, there'll be cuts. But we hope to be able to maintain our ministry at the current level to do their job. There needs to be the attitude of service and continual moving forward. We have some of the legacy, too, and I don't mean in terms of people, but our projects. One is our camp program that is alive and well. We have our camps in place. In fact, we just were able to get Pinecrest again. That's been one of our finest camps in Missouri. We also have 11 feast sites, and we have three special sites. That's 14. Plus, people in New England are saying, please have a special site for us. So we might have 15 sites with only 45 full-time men, some of who have to go internationally. There's going to be lots of opportunity, believe me, for speaking. There'll be at least double the opportunity for speaking and taking a look at local church elders again, because there's going to be a lot of work that needs to be done. Also, we want to continue with Youth Corps. I might mention a few things about Jordan, and I'm working with Gary Antion on this. The people that went over to Jordan basically were United Church of God people. I believe maybe one, maybe is not. But people who run that project are with the other group, and they have wanted to gracefully back out of any church, as they put it, because we really had no choice. And also, they said that they would finance the second half of the program, which is $14,000, which was really okay with us. And so that's where it is right now. But we do want to serve these people spiritually. I'm hoping that someone, hopefully even Gary Antion, can be in Jordan for Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread. Also, we're working on Good Works and working together with LifeNets in keeping our projects going. We have not missed any scholarship payments, whether it be to the projects we already had or to what's in Latin America. We just recently sent $25,000 to Latin America, and Good Works and LifeNets will assume Latin American scholarships after this year, as well as Latin America, basically putting it under one umbrella. But the good news is that the two, LifeNets and Good Works, will have almost a transparent working relationship one with another. And there's some people that like Good Works. You know, we will have that available, but it won't have a structure like LifeNets, which has had quite a number of projects. We had our best year financially and project-wise, the year 2010. So I just wanted to give you this brief report. Yes?
Yeah, I'd like to ask a note of clarification that would help me. It's not complex, but I keep hearing this figure mentioned, and we're going to be dealing with things strategically, operationally, budget-wise. And maybe Peter can address some of this later with numbers. He's always good with numbers. You're talking about our assets, and that's very important when we're looking at these, your spiritual assets. You mentioned that figure, and because you're mentioning that, it's being televised, and it's going to be going down in print. When you use the figure of 7,500 or 7,700 brethren, is that in the United States?
In the United States.
Okay, let me mention it. That's just, you hear this figure, and people remember what they first hear. And so the figure, that is just simply for the United States.
Right.
So then we have other hundreds, if not thousands of brethren. We have to think about this in a bigger picture, hundreds of thousands of brethren around the world, plus we have the assets of our dedicated co-workers and donors that are coming on, plus the aspect that you mentioned, that is just simply attendance in January. January is a low month because of winter. That's simply church attendance. That is not people that are on our roster that consider themselves United Church of God members. Allow me to use an example. Redlands, which has a very topographically diverse area, while they're all very much supporters of the United Church of God, we may only have 60% of our membership there on any given Sabbath because of their age, because of the mountains, because of the deserts. So I'm just saying, I think we need to strategically and look at our assets at a broader level than just simply the attendance. I'd maybe like to have you address that. Plus, I think that will give our members and our ministers encouragement of recognizing the assets that we do have. That's not just limited to that.
Right. Well, I wanted to report some numbers.
Those are numbers that we all know.
These
that
are
we
hard
use
numbers
in our
have.
Books, but it's bigger than that.
Yeah, I don't know all the international statistics. We basically consider Canada, Australia intact. You know, we consider other areas, Germany intact, UK intact, and I just didn't really even.
No, I'm not saying that on your part. Yeah. I think you started. I'm just saying we have a larger picture, especially as the gentlemen around the table are looking how to, consider situations in media, the donors, the co-workers, those that aren't able to attend, that there is, I just want to say, there is a great support for what we are striving to do for God in the United Church of God that is beyond that 7,500 figure.
Right.
If people just hear figures, and the first time you hear a figure, that's what you stay with. And I'm just trying to say maybe you should expand up.
Yes, Peter?
Yeah, and there are two benchmarks each year. One is the
feast,
the spring holy days, and one's the fall holy days. And that's when you get a really good feel for how many are coming to attend. And people attend on the holy days that often don't attend on a weekly Sabbath because it's a long way, or they're elderly, or they're infirm.
And the Passover figure is going to be very paramount,
yeah,
as to the number of people keeping the Passover with us.
The bottom line is we're blessed.
We are very blessed.
A lot of people out there.
Yeah. I would say that I came into this conference probably more confident and more optimistic than I have to other conferences where there were unknowns. Because I know that one thing is known, is that God is with us. We have a good spirit that we're working with. We have two-thirds of most everything that's still with us. And the relationships that we have between and among the ministry is something that you can't even put a figure on. I have been talking with ministers continually. And the spirit I have from them of sacrifice, of wanting to help out, and being sacrificial is just beyond words. Any other questions?
Okay, thanks, Rick. Let's take a break for a few minutes. We'll be back at 10:30.
Melvin, it's so good to have you as chairman. We get more breaks.
One thing I didn't tell. I would like to pass out. I would like to pass out the chart showing all of our ministries in place. This is for all the council members. The red pastors are those who are now fully employed. Green are local church elders handling congregations. And the purple are projected.